and welcome to the CG Pro podcast. This is episode 52 with Corey Williams. If you enjoy what you see today, you can follow us at becomecgpro.com or in our Facebook group. So it gives me great pleasure to welcome Corey. Corey's a friend and an amazing, prolific creator in the Unreal space. He's an OG YouTuber, coming from the very early days, the beginning of YouTube, if you like, has been creating amazing content himself since then. So an entrepreneur in that space. Corey, welcome. It's great to have you on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. So I got a lot of things to ask you, but I'd love you to just talk a little bit about how you got going with content creation. I know it goes, you span multiple media at this point, from going from video to now generating CG content as well. So how did you get started with all of this?
Getting a little bit of feedback. So basically, you know, of course, started out, a natural content creation. You know, I just wanted to show the crazy life of my friends and I way back in the day, back in the 90s, good old 90s. And then, you know, social media came around. I found my way onto YouTube, became the world's first professional YouTuber, meaning like I was able to get brands first, grew a channel in, 2005. And then just over time, continued to grow an audience. But with that said, 18 years pass and I'm getting older. I don't appeal to the same audience anymore. And I had all these filmmaking skills and I had all these abilities and charismatic, and I come up with ideas very quickly. And I was like, well, I've got to do something. I can't just, throw in the towel and retire as a content creator. I needed to do something different. And, I'd always loved video games. And I said, I want to try to be a developer. And so at first I started making, video games, little fun video games. And it wasn't an Unreal Engine. I actually started in Unity. As I was doing that, I started realizing, I was like, wait, if I'm making video games, I can actually make my own videos. I mean, there's all these people that do like Let's Plays with, games that are already out. And I'm like, well, what if I made my own games? And then one thing led to another. And I had this kids channel as well, because I have kids now. And they're really young. And I thought a lot of the stuff in the kids space on YouTube was kind of weird. And I thought, what if I can mix these two? What if I can make content for kids very quickly using this? And so I doubled down on that. And in Unity, I built this virtual production set. And this is in 2019. And it was really cool. And it was all done in VR. And so I was making kids cartoons very quickly, all in VR, with all of this camera tech. I had everything I needed, right? Millions and millions of views were coming in from that. And my kids' channel was blowing up. And I thought, this is so great. Wow, this is the future. And that's when I saw Corey Strasburger's, character when he was doing his motion capture thing at
Blue.
Well, no. It was before Blue. When he was doing the baby stuff at SIGGRAPH. Yeah. And he did a live motion capture demo. And I thought, look at that. Look how cool that is. And then I was like, what if I took this really simple idea that I've built in Unity and I made it a little more realistic in Unreal Engine? I was like, man, wow, I gotta figure this out. So pandemic hits, that time came and everything fell apart. The world, collapsed there for a minute. And I thought, what a time to get into this. Like, if I can't go anywhere, if I can't do anything and I'm stuck in this house, I've got my family and that's great. I'm gonna make content for my kids. Then why not invest money into this stuff that Corey was doing and apply my knowledge of filmmaking and audience growth and all of this and really push that direction? And so that's what I did. So for the next 2 years after the pandemic happened, I literally stopped creating content across all of my platforms and just focused on changing my knowledge from Unity to Unreal Engine. And then I bought so many different, Unreal Engine assets. I tore them all apart. I just studied how they were all put together. I didn't take any online classes or anything like that. I just broke everything and found a fix for everything. And any type of project that I could take on, I took on, just to gain new knowledge You know, and there were a lot of people who inspired me early on as well, like Solomon Jagway, who I had the pleasure of working with on the Belonging Project, as well as, of course, you and Jackie. And there were many other people that I was just kind of like watching, saying, okay, this is a thing. And so yeah, now here we are. You know, it's 2023, and I'm very confident in my skills to be able to do just about anything I want to using game engines and my abilities. And now I want to take what I've learned through my trial and error and just give it to other people. And so that's what I'm all about now.
Awesome. Well, kindred spirits in that respect for sure. So what was it like getting into what was it like getting into YouTube in the beginning? I know that like it's very different now than I'm sure it was back in the day.
Yeah. So very, very different. So initially my video content creation was even before MySpace. I started on Newgrounds. And so Newgrounds, I found a way to be able to convert my VHS tapes into Flash, which really back then made a lot of people very unhappy. Because Newgrounds.com was a flash game website, essentially. Some people made Flash animations, but to convert video to Flash, it was not something that people particularly enjoyed. When they started actually watching the content that I was creating, they thought, whoa, hang on a minute, you can watch people's funny videos doing this. And so I started doing that, and then I got big on Newgrounds.com, and the founders of Newgrounds said, hey, they reached out to me and they're like, we like what you're doing, we're going to feature you. And that blew up. And then around that time, Gary Brawlsma, the Numa Numa guy, you know, he blew up too. So we kind of like went at the same time. And I was also a music artist at the time. So my music was going everywhere from, you know, Bob and Tom to Howard Stern and all of this, you know, all over the country. And so, naturally that went. And then of course, Napster happened. This is all part of the story. Remember, like Napster and the Kazaa? I was one of those jerks who admittedly was uploading my own music using other people's names, other artists and things. And people were angry again. And I'm like, hey, if you're going to steal content, you're going to get taken advantage of too. So I took advantage of them. And the people that got angry were angry at first. And then they thought, actually, this guy's pretty good. And then so I grew an audience that way through the Napster Kazaa thing. I used that to my advantage. And then MySpace came around, instantly blew up on MySpace. Now, where does YouTube come into this? I was the number one comedic music artist in the world independently on MySpace back in 2004 era time. I had fans scouring the internet for anywhere else I can upload videos other than Newgrounds.com. And so there were many other, you know, video platforms out there. There was like Vidalife and so many other ones I can't even remember because it's been a lot of years, right? But YouTube was the only one that didn't automatically play when you use the HTML to put it on your MySpace. And so I got rid of all the other ones and just stuck to YouTube. And then I sent my fans to YouTube and I thought, well, there's something to that. And then instantly just grew there because I went all in on YouTube because I saw the future of what it could be for content creators. Because I'm like, if I could have all this success myself, you know, it's going to be easier because like, I'm not the most creative person in the world. I have a lot of creativity, but there are a lot of people with better visions than me that I knew would ultimately help. But, you know, I was ahead of it. And that's kind of like what I like to do. I like to stay ahead of trends in this sort of way. And that's kind of like why I'm in this position now, because I know what this is going to do for creators in the future.
Cool.
Long form answers.
No, that's great. That's great. Yeah. I mean, it's fascinating. So was that like YouTube pre-Google or was it Google already?
Oh, definitely pre-Google. I mean, I knew the founders, Chad and Steve of YouTube. Like I had direct conversations with them. So yeah, I even some of the features on YouTube were things that I had helped come up with. So like annotations, that was actually one of my things that I had helped to create on the site. Not physically, but I was the idea. Yeah.
Cool.
It's gone now, which I'm sad. Saw a small violin, but whatever.
Damn you change. Yeah, it's really interesting to hear about it. I know it's so different now. It's so much bigger. There's so many more people on it. Mm-hmm. So flash forwards to now, you're not on videos on YouTube. You're basically acting through puppeteering, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah, so I definitely don't get on camera nearly as much anymore. The only time I do is, of course, on LinkedIn when I'm, you know, trying to help inspire or teach people in some way, shape, or form. But yeah, I'm mostly a virtual character. I have one virtual character on my kids' channel. It's called the Silly Crocodile. And the Silly Crocodile is, you know, I don't actually use motion capture with a suit. I use motion capture with my face using my iPhone and then my PS4 controller, and then doing all of that in real time, and then just putting that content out pretty fast. But I'm starting to now integrate my abilities with motion capture into that series. But yeah, I do like short films, and I was doing client work for a little while. But I'm doing a little bit of everything because everything's fun. It's a wild west, like explore, you know, that's what we should do.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. So seeing coming from video and being in this space now, basically doing puppeteering, you're still acting. What fundamentals cross over between what you were doing before to what you're doing now?
You know, the biggest thing that crosses over is audience growth. How to connect with your audience. Like, that's one thing that I think a lot of creators, especially today, are lacking, is that ability to connect with audience. You know, I kind of like to talk to people about the what versus the why. A lot of people, when they create content, they have the what. What is it? What is it I'm creating? I'm creating a tutorial. I'm creating a short film series. Okay, but why? Like, what is the why behind it? What is your true intention? Not because you just want to make money, not because you're trying to get a bunch of views, but like, what purpose does it serve in this world, and who is that audience specifically? Like, get down to the nitty-gritty details of exactly who your audience is. Niche down to the smallest pinpoint. Once you can do that and understand that as a content creator, I don't care what any channel, I can do this for any channel. I can blow up anybody I want to in this way. Once you can find out who that person is and you make content for that person, the rest just happens. That person becomes a super fan and it just trickles out and gets bigger and bigger. And even after you've been creating content for a while, if you're not getting views, sometimes it's about changing your SEOs, not because you're trying to please the algorithm, but because you're trying to pinpoint that person. And I think, like, one of my superpowers as a content creator is being able to look at other people's YouTube channels and go, that's who your viewer is, and then helping them out, you know? So, like, I've done that for a few virtual creators, you know, in our world here, and it's been working for them as well as me, which has been really, really good.
Cool. What are some of the things that you recommend to people in terms of how do you you're making stuff because you think it's cool, or you're making stuff because you enjoy it, or you're making stuff whatever the motivation is? How do you then, like, start seeing who the people are and figuring out who that person is?
So first you have to think about inside of you, for whatever you create, whether it's a virtual character or whatever, what is it that you are trying to say to the world? What is it that you want out of this? Me personally, like, so this kid's channel that I have for Silly Crocodile, it is just a 2D crocodile. Usually I have them on my desk. I have a little toy crocodile. But it's just like a little 2D, 3D sort of crocodile. The intention of this is I want to reach out to kids who are disadvantaged in life. Maybe they don't have their parents around as much as they would like them to be. They're always stuck in front of their iPads. They're not learning anything outside of what they're seeing online, right? And I want to help make a difference in their lives. I want to help them navigate life in a way that maybe their brains didn't think of before. And I want to, more importantly, help them stay in touch with their creative side in a positive way instead of a negative way. Because our minds, we have the ability to create great things, but we also have the ability to create destruction with it, right? So that's what this is all about. So what I think of is, who are three children that are just like that? And I relate to that. Like, it's very special to me because, like, I had a really rough childhood. So I think about those kids and I pinpoint exactly. And then I think about, okay, between those three kids, what do they have in common? What are their common cores? Now that I have those things, what sort of content can I make that targets the interests that those three share, but also answers questions that they never knew to ask, you know? And so as I kind of do that, I grow. And then eventually, you know, even though I'm targeting this one very small area of people, other people with common interests, say they have three things in common outside of the fact that they had they're having a rough childhood, there are going to be plenty of other people. And that's exactly what's the case with, you know, my channel. Like, we're just on Just for Kids right now. I think I'm pulling in about 40 million views a month, just on that channel alone, you know, and then I've got five different channels and all of them are still pulling in a lot as well. But like that, every single channel, this is what I do. I niche down to that specific point. But you want to see another way to get a little bit of a growth hack for content creators, especially for virtual creators. I'll show it real quick. This is something this is what I was working on today. So I'd love to share it. All right. So let me move this over so I can share this with you. Hang on a sec.
Anyone listening in audio, I will try and we'll try and describe it to you.
All right. You guys see this?
Yeah.
This is how I come up with not only my content, but what is going to get a lot of views. These are 9 thumbnails that I created today. All of them, I created them today. Well, actually some of them last night. I created some last night. And what I do is I take those thumbnails, which all feature my silly crocodile, and I show them to my kids. And I say, which one of these is the most interesting to you? Pick a thumbnail. I don't have any idea of what I'm going to create with those thumbnails yet. I know that I can create something with them because that's the way my mind works. Which one do you think, Ed? Which do you think children between the ages of 3 and 9 years old would like the most?
I'm going to go with the one on the bottom right.
Bottom right. That's a lot of what adults say is the bottom right. My children actually picked the top middle. Interesting though, right? Yeah. But you know, I love the fact that it took you a while to figure that out. That means they're good thumbnails. So yeah. Basically, I asked them, I said, so why did you pick the one in the top middle? They said, because he does not know how this is going to react. The kids already know that it's his own shadow, but there's something different about it. And this tells a story that's beyond them. Like this on the bottom right, we already know that's like a, you know, some kind of crazy looking creature that's going to chase him. So it's going to turn into a chase. But the top one is curiosity. The number 2 for my kids was the dinosaur on the right middle side chasing the silly crocodiles. By the way, that's my office right up there on the top. This is on my street here in Tulsa, Oklahoma. So it's just photography, but the inspiration for these thumbnails, OBS. That's how I'm doing it. So the inspiration for thumbnails like that not only gives you high quality thumbnails that you can create very quickly, and I create those before I create the video, but then I can take those thumbnails and tell a story because of the thumbnail. And so that's how you get people in. And that's where I start. Instead of creating an entire short film and doing all this stuff and it looks amazing and then trying to figure out how to name it and how to thumbnail it, do it the other way around. You get so many more views and you really target your audience perfectly because of that. That's just a little growth hack.
No, it's great. I mean, it's the market research, basically.
Research
and figuring out what your audience wants and making it. And typically people create businesses and things, they think of what they want to make and try and force it on people.
Yeah. So how do I target my audience so that they're young and the parents can see it and all that sort of stuff? I just look at, you know, first of all, I look at my own kids. You know, I listen to my kids. I study what they're watching and I just kind of ears all the time, right? And then I will try to focus in on that niche. And then I'll just really get in there. And then that's kind of, you know, it's repetitive. The more you do it, the more the YouTube algorithm starts to understand. And there's a little bit of word to mouth or a word of mouth. There you go. Word to mouth, a little bit of word of mouth, but it's just being repetitive, having a sight in mind and just staying on that.
That's an interesting question that came up there from the audience. Someone's, I guess, curious about how does the parent being in between affect how you create, I guess, because parents are somewhat controlling what they.
Yeah. I mean, the parents, I do my best to also make the content that is good for the parents to watch as well. Like, I don't like the weird stuff that's on YouTube. Like, I want parents to be able to watch this with their kids and get something as well. Like, if there was one video that I would tell anybody in this audience to go watch, it's my silly crocodile. It's like a fast running one, the fastest running crocodile in the desert or whatever. Go watch that video. I can almost guarantee you that you as a person will get something from that as well. Even though it's made for kids, there's a deeper meaning to adults, you know? And that's what I'm kind of focused on as well.
Where does your inspiration for some of the ideas come from, whether it's like a character or a piece of story, or where do you draw from?
My kids, my life, you know, I would say half of the videos on the silly crocodile are actually stories told to me by my kids. I started out with a question, hey, what did the silly crocodile do today? And my son will be like, oh, today he wanted to go see his friend at his birthday party. Okay, he's going to a birthday party. Where's his birthday party? It's in space. Ooh, so the silly crocodile went to space. Did he make the spaceship by himself? Yeah. What's the spaceship look like? Oh, it's like this and it's round. Can you draw me a picture? And they draw me a picture. And what's the birthday party look like? Literally just keep asking questions. And like, it comes from the mind of a child and goes straight back out to kids. And then I kind of take that. And that's literally what happened for one episode that I did with space. It was all told by my son. You know, so, and then, you know, like I was showing you all the thumbnails that I'd created, I asked my kids, okay, what happens in this? You know, why is the dinosaur chasing the two silly crocodiles? What do you think happened? Is he a nice dinosaur? Is he a mean dinosaur? If he's nice, then why do you think he's running from him? Why are they scared? And you ask those questions, and eventually you start to like help them fall into this like beautiful story circle. You know, which is a really great exercise for kids' minds, you know, but for other content creators out there who aren't necessarily creating kids' content, you can do the same thing. Create a thumbnail that you think is really cool that would appeal to your audience as a content creator, and then tell a story from that thumbnail. I know it seems backwards, but like in the world of YouTube, it's you versus everyone else. And if you have the more appealing thumbnail, like they're going to click on you. But if your cover sucks, your video, doesn't matter how good it is or how much money you put in, they're not going to watch.
Right.
You know, unless there's some miracle that like somebody who has a lot of followers shares your content, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Makes sense.
Yeah.
So how do you share the thumbnails with them in the first place? Say you've got no audience and you're starting from scratch.
For me, it's a cheat because I have kids. So I just show my kids, you know, but if you don't, then find someone who does have kids. You know, there's always somebody in your life. If you're creating content and you have no relation to it whatsoever or no understanding of who it is that's watching, then are you sure you should be making that content in the first place? You know, something to ask yourself. There's a lot of people that I've talked to who are like, hey, I'm going to start making kids content because they get a lot of views. Sweet. Do you have kids? No. I see it gets a lot of views and I know how to do this. Well, do you have any kids around you? Well, no. That's going to be a problem because next thing you know, they're going to be creating content for themselves and the kids aren't going to know what's going on. You're going to be making videos that look like they're meant for 10-year-olds and you're going to be counting or you're going to be doing your ABCs. You know, like there's got to be, that's the importance of really niching down.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. So how much is what you've learned from doing video previously to now doing animated content, how much has that helped? Like previously did you do any like acting training or anything for what you did before? Did you just kind of figure it out? And was that your training for what you're doing now in terms of like the acting part of it?
You know, I obsess about things. So like I have had acting training a long time ago. I was even a stuntman and I'm actually trained for WWE. I was trained by Rikishi and Gangrel. Really? Yeah. I've had a lot of life, man. You know, being a YouTuber, that's what it does to you. It makes you get out. Like when you have, I don't know, I never had a desk job, you know. I've never worked a regular job. I was a firefighter once, but that was it. But yeah, I mean, I've had a lot of different training, but I'm still learning constantly. You know, what's really great about being a virtual creator is that this concept of being able to think backwards is so much easier than it's ever been. Like if I wasn't a virtual creator, I wouldn't have been able to create all those thumbnails in the way that I did, right? Because I created those in Engine. That's all in Unreal Engine. So the fact that I can create all these different thumbnails very quickly, that's amazing. Instead of being a content creator, you shoot all your stuff and you do all that and then you have to stop. You know, that's Yeah, that's hard. That's hard to be able to, you know, do that. There was a question from somebody. They noticed that there's branded content like PJ Masks, Peppa Pig, Play-Doh characters. How does that work? Technically, it's a very interesting thing. So it falls under UGC, which is user-generated content. So long as you say that, hey, this is a Peppa Pig toy or a PJ Masks toy, and it's actually a toy, even if it's scanned, it falls under protection. And in fact, a lot of those companies love that you do that. Like I was working with the Peppa Pig people for a little while. Originally it was under E1, which eventually got bought out by not Mattel, one of the other bigger names or whatever, but they got bought. So I don't really work with them anymore. But when I was working with them, they were like, yeah, here's some stuff. Here's free stuff. Use these toys, put these toys in your stuff. And so I'd scan them and put it in. Actually, I take that back. I just did a Peppa Pig video recently. But it still falls under the same thing where I did a realistic scan, a 3D scan of the Peppa Pig toys. And they're so realistic that you can't tell which ones are real and which ones are fake. So that's how I was able to work with it. You know, like I'm not trying to, directly, you know, recreate a cartoon. That's where you would fall into trouble. But telling stories with things that I have that you can purchase from a store, that's safe.
That's cool. Yeah. A lot of people ask that about fan art in general, like what's okay to do and what's not. It's cool to hear that. It's essentially, it's good marketing for those brands.
If you're making
stuff and it gets seen by people.
Even better if you can leave, like they love it even more, like if you leave a link to the toys that you use and where you bought them in the video description, they love that. And you can make extra money from that too, like Amazon affiliate. Like I made a lot of money from Amazon affiliates as well. So not only am I, you know, making money from all the YouTube views on all like the Peppa Pig stuff, like the parents are going down and they loved it so much. The kids are like, hey, can I have that? They'd buy it and then I get a percentage of that too. So it's just like double dipping and it just goes crazy because Peppa Pig never once paid me. I never asked for it, you know? So it was just like a, you know, a handshake and a friendly yes, you know? So.
Right. Mm-hmm. And what, tell us a bit about your process of say you're working with a toy that exists already and some of the stuff that you've done is really cool. The He-Man animations. And I know that you go through quite a process to get that to be able to be puppeteered. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah. So, well, the He-Man in particular was much more difficult than it is today. Today I can do things, oh my gosh, so insanely fast. I did a He-Man character. I can't really pop it up, but basically, you know, I did a 3D scan of my He-Man toy and I rigged him up. And thankfully, like I'm really good at rigging. I can rig up a character in no time flat. But what was really tough about that character then was I was just straight up using photogrammetry, which, you know, you take lots and lots of pictures from all different sides and you have to stitch them together, but it was ugly. It never looked good. And it was always just really, really rough. But today you can use AI like 3D Presso. I think it's 3dpresso.ai to 3D scan something. And it looks so good. It looks like it's real. And then you can do that. So my rigging technique, by the way, there's a couple ways you can do it. If you want to do it very, very fast, either you can use Blender, and you know, just do the old school, whatever traditional way of doing it, or you can use what's called ActorCore Auto Rig, which is free from Reillusion, and you just put your character in there. It's a lot like Mixamo, if you've ever used Mixamo, except on another level. And so once you have that, you can get that character rigged, and you can test all the animations, and you can export that FBX, and it saves you a ton of time. So yeah, that's kind of like the way. And so like my last video that I did on Just for Kids, altogether I scanned and rigged 16 characters in a day. Wow. Like all completely different skeletons, and they all move and they all articulate and they're all hyper realistic.
That's incredible. Having built characters from scratch a bunch.
Yeah, time is
16 days maybe for one character if you like the right way around. But we're different.
But now it's different. Times. Yeah, yeah. And it's fantastic some of the things you can do now, you know, with all of the tech. And that's what I'm really trying to do. And yes, ActorCore is through Reillusion. I think it used to be through somebody else potentially, but they bought it. I'm not sure if that's exactly the case, but I very much believe in like the Character Creator 4 and iClone 8 suite. I love them. They are expensive initially, but man, do they help with speed. especially when it comes to rigging and doing all of that sort of stuff. I mean, I still use Unreal Engine as well, but it's just there's certain things you can do in there that are just so much faster.
Yeah, and it has its limits.
It has its limits. Yeah, everything's got its limits and its strengths. Just use what you can with its strengths.
The right tool for the right job.
Exactly.
You love experimenting with trying things out and seeing what you like or what works best for you and your work.
Oh man, R&D all day. I love that. If I could just not create content anymore and just do an R&D, I'd love that too. If I could split off into two, yeah, because I love research and development. I love going through and just like creating new things and seeing what I can do. And I have so many projects even on my computer right now that I just want to put on the Unreal Engine marketplace. But the problem is the Unreal Engine marketplace, sometimes when you're selling assets, you have to really get down into the details of everything before you submit it. And I'm like, I just don't have the time. Yeah. So I'm actually getting ready to raise some money so that I can get some more people in here to help me out, because I'm doing so much and I have so much that I could be doing.
Who are you looking for? It's a good opportunity to put it out into the ether.
Well, right now I'm just looking for money so I can hire. But yes, I will be hiring though. I'm going to be hiring once I get the funding in. And I'll definitely be going to you guys because I know you guys are training up some good people. So I appreciate everything you're doing for that.
Thanks. Yeah, we're doing our best for sure. Yeah. And we focus on that side of things, on helping people get the skills that they need. Mm-hmm. We've got a couple more questions in the chat here. So someone's asking, Netflix does a lot of A/B testing of thumbnails and copy and all. Is this idea of finding interesting thumbnails first and then creating the story is interesting? Do you ever go the other way?
Yes. No, I mean, this way that I'm doing it now is also a test. I know for a fact this is going to work because I've already kind of done that. But I was doing A/B tests on YouTube a while back, but this way it makes a lot more sense. But here, think about it this way though. Netflix, the only reason they're doing A/B testing after the fact is because they can't just, well, I suppose they could, but they can't quickly create new thumbnails as fast as I can or as fast as anybody at home can in this way, right? A lot of it is because we have animated content. Like how hard, maybe I shouldn't comment too much on how or why they do things, because I don't necessarily know the details of it, so I shouldn't be able to speak on it. But from my outside perspective, doing it this way is still a new way for me because of the fact that we have Unreal Engine to be able to do this for us. Like a real life video, you can't do A/B tests nearly as fast or nearly as easy, Right. So you would have to do it after the fact,
Yeah, that makes sense. The Unreal kind of gets the hype for the real-time render speeds, but for me it's the speed of iteration of testing an idea that's more interesting actually.
Yeah. I mean, that's we can create content very quickly. We can change things. Like we can change I can keep the entire project. This is something Netflix can't do except for an animated project. It's like being able to keep an entire project the way that it is, export it in English and post it on YouTube, and then change the mouth visemes in every single action to an AI mouth generator. Like you can change your language to another scene. So hang on a second. The other day, this is AI. This is me speaking Spanish in AI.
Sus dientes podían cortar diamantes y sus garras estaban afiladas como navajas.
That's my voice reading my children's book. The fact that we have that ability to just like upload the audio that we have already done for that one specific video in the time that it's supposed to be, and then take that audio back, put it into Unreal Engine and change the mouth visemes, and then export that. And then now you've got a Spanish version. Like, that's so cool. You can't do that on Netflix. You can't do that without other, crazy stuff. Yeah. So I'm excited about so many things about ADD there.
No, you're in the right community for that, I think. It's interesting seeing what's happening as well with video now as well, seeing these tools coming out for there's one where you can be looking at your autoprompter with your eyes on off screen, and then this tool corrects your eyes back to looking forward. So it looks like you're looking at the camera, and imagine the extension of that being able to correct face shapes and do it with video too.
I mean, yeah. And I think it's, Yeah. And as we continue down this road of virtual creators and all of that sort of stuff, it's not going to be very long until this AI software that I was able to produce this in, like I sent it in and they sent me that same thing back in 15 seconds, I think it was, you know, and it was amazing. That'll happen in real time. So there is going to become a time, and I think you'll only be able to do this with virtual creators or with, like you were saying, with that AI software that does the eyes, but with virtual creators being able to live stream and speak, and then that will automatically change your lip shapes for any language. So multi-streaming and multi languages, and you'll be able to pick whichever language you want to watch that stream in. Like I'm so excited for that.
A lot of this, I think, comes back to, we talk about this a lot at CG Pro and in the community, that a lot of these tools, there's a lot of talk about these tools at the moment. There's a lot of moral debate and a lot of striking and a lot of all sorts of things. But if you bring it down to what some of what they're doing in, take the derivative work aside, but a lot of what these things are doing is allowing you to create things quicker, being able to, what you've described is allowing you to create 16 characters in a day. 10 years ago, working in visual effects, you'd have a whole team working on one character for a week. Now you as an individual creator can essentially punch above your weight compared to what we could do back then. And this frees you up to be more creative.
Mm-hmm. I see a comment from somebody here. I've been a fan of Corey since 2008. Very inspirational. Outside of YouTube, what other ways do you think there are to make a career doing this work for yourself? Man, that's what we're all trying to understand. That's what we're all trying to figure out. This is all so new. Like I was saying earlier, this is the Wild West. You know, we're all trying and doing different things. Like I spoke to a lady earlier that was like an optometrist, and she was trying to find new ways to bring people in to help train their eyes, to be able to see the world differently and to help your mind work differently based on the things that you see. And that was over my head. That's brand new stuff. That's really cool. I've seen people that, you know, they're using this stuff to just help tell stories of people who've even passed on. Like I can take, okay, I'm gonna get real personal here, and I'm gonna be very, very, my dad passed away a long time ago when I was a kid. I don't have very many memories of him, but anytime I smell like, you know, musk and leather, it brings me back to him. And for the longest time, I could not mention his name without crying. And it wasn't until I had kids that I became him. I became everything that I loved about him. And so there was that. So there, for me personally, I wanted to, in a little way, bring him back. And so I'm kind of looking at this now of like, there is this ability for me to be able to digitize him and bring him back so that I can see him differently. I don't know necessarily what that's going to do for me or for my family or any of that sort of stuff, but there's something about him and his stories that I feel like I could help to push out to the world who that man really was, because he was a really great man. And so it's like furthering stories for people who can't tell stories anymore. Or what about like, oh man, there's just so many things. I can go on and on about all of that. But yeah. Are there other ways to make a living? Absolutely. You know, there's a million ways. And right now there are so many ways that I can't even fathom. Like when I started making YouTube videos, you know, or videos on the internet, how was I going to know that it was going to be as big as it was? And how would I ever be able to conceive how many different types of channels and things there would be? How would I know that ASMR would be such a massive thing?
It's huge.
You know,
I can't believe how much content there is in that.
Right. I mean, There are literally videos on YouTube that have millions and millions of views of 8 hours of nothing, and you get woken up by somebody from Breaking Bad screaming at you. Like literally, there are videos that are that absurd, you know? So like, what can you do? There's no limit right now. You just got to figure it out. That's the great thing about all of this. But it's not going to take off for a couple more years. Right now, we are so far ahead of our time. Like, what we're doing is not a household known thing. Like, I literally, like, when I try to tell people what it is I do, my elevator pitch, I say I'm one man Pixar, because it's the only way people really can kind of grasp what it is that I do. And even then, they don't understand. And even if I show them the cartoon, they don't quite get it because it's so new. And the people that do get it, this is going to, okay, I'm probably going to offend some people, but you know what? Be offended. There's a lot of people right now that are, yeah, here we go. Let's offend people, but not in a bad way. It's okay. It's okay. You're safe. I'm safe. I'm safe. No, think about it like this. When cameras first came out, right? You always see like videos of people starting to see the cameras. They go, you know, it was always kids running down the street and waving at the cameras because they knew there was something weird about it. And they knew that they had this chance to see themselves on the silver screen in some way, shape, or form, right? And those old videos, right? And then as time went on, think about like, say like in the 80s, right? If there was a news station or you know, a TV camera crew out in front of a mall, there's a bunch of kids waving outside and trying to get on TV. Oh my God, I'm on TV. Remember how people used to like fangirl out or whatever you want to call it. They don't do that anymore, right? People don't freak out when there's cameras around. In fact, even if we see a news crew, we don't even care. Why? Because we're so consumed. There's always cameras around. Right now I'm on camera. I got like four different cameras on this thing. We all have access to cameras, right? So now it's become numb. I'm getting somewhere, I promise. This is where it's good. Ready for the offense?
All right.
Now what's happening is we are in a state where we are starting to get the first time we're seeing ourselves animated. Hi, oh my gosh, but we're not doing this. We're doing this. How many videos have you seen on about Unreal Engine and MetaHuman that they just do this?
Right. It's like a demo mode.
Oh my God.
Range testing.
God, everybody's doing it. And it drives me nuts. It drives me absolutely nuts because it's the same as this. And it's not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing. And that's where I was offending people. But I think right now what needs to happen is people need to calm it down. Yes, it works. It's really great that it works and do that and show people that you're able to do it. But I want people to now think about what can you truly do with it? Instead of like checking out all these features and throwing loads of money at all this stuff just to be able to do this, maybe stop for a moment and think about, why am I doing it? What do I want to say with this? You know, like don't throw your money at the first motion capture thing you see. And I'm not going to say brand names about motion capture suits that don't work well, but there's a lot of people that get into this and they spend money on a motion capture suit that doesn't work well. And then they end up just getting out of this industry because it's too hard because that motion capture suit was just a pain, all because they wanted to do this. Right.
Yeah.
What I hope is that people stop and think about what exactly do I want out of it before going forward into it. But yeah, I think I went a little far on that, but
it's a good point. I mean, you're essentially saying don't put the technology first, put the story and what you're trying to get across to people first, which should be, speaking of Pixar, you know, they've famously said for 25, 30, 35 years, story is king.
Mm-hmm.
This is what it's about.
Yeah. But it's, yeah, we're all, I mean, and I admit I've had my moments of, you know, but it's time for us to really, really, you know, get into this thing and be serious. And that's what I really want to do is just help people find that. So like my journey lately as a virtual creator, trying to help other creators, not necessarily on my kids' channel, is trying to help people find that, find their why, not the what. The what is this? Yes, we can do that. That's what it is. But why are we doing this? Like, what is it about us? What are we trying to say hi to? What are we excited about? And how can we focus in on finding that and tell that story the way it needs to be told?
For you, you've clearly got a lot of joy out of inspiring children. And that's something which you really care about. For other mm-hmm. people, it could be different genres. Do you have any advice to people for finding those things that they really care about that they want to say?
Yeah. I mean, again, it's just kind of like reflect on yourself, like almost like meditate, you know, like think deeply about when you're dead and they're reading your eulogy. Is it your eulogy or whatever it is? What do they say about you? like, what is it that you're leaving this world when you're gone? Like, what are you leaving the world? How are you leaving this world better than you found it? What is it that you want to do to change it, whether big or small? And find that and go in that direction and actually push into it. And don't give up because it's hard. Go into it because it's hard. Because it's at the end of the day, it's not about, it's not necessarily about getting there. It's the journey of actually getting to that direction. And so, like, how do you find that? You just find inside of yourself, what is it your heart is truly wanting to say? What is your soul truly trying to push you into? We all have that. We have dreams, you know, but not a lot of them. It's like, what do they say? Everyone can see the stars, but very few are brave enough to reach for them. You know?
Yeah, I think a lot of that can come from the inspiration of seeing other people doing it. So you doing it is showing people that they can do it. And
yeah,
I think it's great that you also break it down and show the process as well, showing them, like, there's a question here that somebody's asking about how do I start kind of more on the technology side? Like, what do I need to be able to do this stuff?
On the technology side, you know, that's the thing. If you don't have, say you don't have a motion capture suit, maybe you don't even have a camera or a phone an iPhone that can do that stuff, then start by telling stories with Unreal Engine, just, you know, creating little characters. You know, like, you don't even have to, you don't have to purchase a single thing. Even with the Unreal Engine mannequin, like, you can do all sorts of fun things with that. There's always a way. Even if you don't have a computer that can run Unreal Engine, like, there's plenty of other ways you can do it in real life. Like, start with making short films, or it you know, without knowing exactly where it is that you want to go, I can't give you an answer. And even if I did give you an answer, that's not going to be the right, exact, perfect answer, because everyone's going to have their own unique path, because there's no one answer that fits for everyone like a blanket. You know,
I love that answer, because you're not just saying what you could say, which is get this mocap suit and get this computer and
get, yeah, no, that's
shopping list.
That's why I say don't. Way of doing it. Yeah, yeah, don't get it until you know what you want to do with it. Like, I had to convince myself and my wife, because she's the one that deals with the money. I had to like very much convince her why I was getting a motion capture suit. I wrote out this whole thing. Here's what I want. It's almost like I had to give her a pitch deck on how this thing worked. So, like, we make enough money, but she, yeah, pitch deck my wife on getting a mocap suit. But and you know, initially I bought the wrong mocap suit, and then I sent that one back, and I got the right one. But you know, and I've had lots of failures. Don't, like, I did a lot of things wrong in this journey. Don't get me wrong, but all of the things that I did wrong, I help to try to teach people the right way so they don't make the mistakes that I made. And by that, I mean, like, I thankfully I had a lot of money to be able to do this. In 2020, I spent about $150,000 worth of my own money to buy things and tear them apart, and to just purely do Unreal Engine with no other, I did nothing else but learn Unreal Engine, right? That's a lot of money. I never went to school either. So that, I called that my school. That was my college. So, I was lucky enough to be able to do that, but now it's like I'm hoping that people can hear what it is that I'm teaching them, because I can save them that crazy amount of money and time that it took me to be able to try to figure all of this stuff out for myself.
That's cool.
Yeah, and I'm not doing courses or anything like that. You know, like, that's, I want you guys to do that. I'm a creator. I send people your way. I inspire. I'm on the side that's like, I inspire them to do it. And how do I do it? Go talk to these people. So, we all need each other.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I think it's a great answer to the question. And think about what it is that you're trying to make, because there's tons of tools out there. They're all good in some way. They all do a job. They're all right for some sort of job. But if you don't know what the job is that you're trying to do, you can. I've bought tons of kit in the past. I got a real addiction to it back in the day with music, kind of trying to buy boxes that had the most LEDs on so it looked cool on my desk.
Oh, geez. Like,
that. I made a lot of music too, but you know, that really taught me something, that was buying kit first rather than thinking, because you can make music with a piece of string and or your own voice, and you, like many of us who got into visual arts, did it with a very cheap, simple camera or some stop motion, which is available to almost everybody. Whether you've got a phone, you can animate.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and then so somebody had asked, what is the right mocap suit, in my opinion? All right. So there are many different right mocap suits. Every single mocap suit that exists today is right.
Good answer.
For you, it's different. Every single one is right. They all have their strengths. Like I'll rattle them off. And if this helps anyone, then great. Here we go. Rococo suits. Really great if you are a game developer and you need short animations for like a punch or a jump or, you know, like really quick things. And you can do this as well if you have like an idle animation, if you're going to be a virtual character, but you don't plan on walking around. Maybe you're just a virtual character that's sitting in a chair. Then a Rococo suit is great for you, if that's all there is, because there's a lot of foot sliding and a lot of problems that can happen and a lot of cleanup that you just don't want to deal with. But if you want a locked hip and you're sitting in a chair and you're live streaming for video games, Rococo. If you're looking to move around and you want something that, you know, you're not relying on staying in one volume and you want to have like really good, solid motion capture and you want to do it for a long period of time, you want to live stream it, Xsens all the way. But there's like three versions of Xsens. There's like the MVN Link. That's the one I use. It's the most expensive, but it's fantastic. I love it. And I swear by it for the work that I do. But then there's also the drawback is that it is a bodysuit. It's like a wetsuit. But let's be honest, if you're a bigger person, if you're shaped differently, if you're really, really tall or something like that, the suit may not fit you. So you're limited to not being able to use that. So, but they also do have the Xsens Awinda. So the Awinda is like a bunch of straps that you can put on, and Xsens still is a really great suit. What makes the Awinda not as good is the fact that you have to put on all of this stuff, and the trackers all have to be charged, and then the calibration is a bit harder, and then there's still a little bit of drift. It's not quite like the MVN Link, but it is a little bit cheaper, which is nice. And those can fit people that are you know, plus sized or even children, which I should have mentioned as well. Like the MVN Link suit, they don't fit my children, so I'd have to use an Awinda if I wanted to capture their motion. So kids option. And then there's one that's lower than the MVN Awinda, which is the I can't remember it, but I've used it, and it's okay. It's just okay. But that's kind of, you just have to look at the price. I think that one costs as much as a Rococo. But the Rococo suit fits better, in my opinion, because this Rococo suit is also a, you know, a full body sort of suit. But again, going back to that thing, if you can't fit into that type of suit, if you're plus or smaller than the average body, then don't get the Rococo at all. Go with the cheapest Xsens suit. And then you also have like Move AI, which is also a motion capture thing. Move AI is really great, but there are drawbacks and everything. Move AI is great for larger captures if you need like a bunch of people, but it's not a live stream option. So you cannot live stream it. It's pretty precise in terms of where people step and all of that, but it's not perfect. There are problems with the hands. There's problems with positioning. There's a problem that you have to get a bunch of cameras, phones, and put them all around you. But I, you know, like I'm mentoring a group of students in Singapore right now, and I've actually recommended that they use Move AI because they're doing like soccer movements and doing flips and all of this sort of stuff that you should not do in a traditional motion capture suit because you'll break it, you know. So that gives you more body freedom. Like if you're wrestling, that's great. And then there's further on, I won't go too much further here because they're all about the same after this, but you have like Vicon, and you've got, what's the other one of the Vicon
Optitrack.
And Optitrack. Yeah. Like those, they're actually cameras that are sensors that sit up in a track in a volume. You get the best quality feedback from all of those. You can do really great stuff, but again, you're locked to a volume, which can be a problem sometimes too. And you've got those balls, so you have to be really careful. Like you couldn't go, ooh, I'm so cold, because you'll be knocking those sensors off, and that's not so good. So, and not to mention the price point on that is, whoa, it's expensive. It's not even,
yeah.
You know, you got to really have a studio and a budget to put into that. So that, I mean, there's a lot of different things there. And then there's video for motion tools. Like there's, I think one is just called Animate, Animes. No, not Animes. I've used a bunch of them, but they're not perfect. They're not perfect. Oh, you know what? Actually, there's another one called Mocap Fusion. If you have the access to VR, Mocap Fusion is fantastic. I've actually used it and no one ever knew that I used it. Mocap Fusion, you get into there. I think it's still in beta, so you can get in there and you just join their Discord, and you can control the character using your controllers, and you can see your character, and then you can step out of your character and then hit replay and watch the skeleton move. And then just like a puppet, you can move the joints in real time and then export that data as FBX. And then now you've got like a new thing. But I wouldn't use that for like, you know, detailed stuff. Like you can't run with it. It's more of just a like explaining sort of thing. But it's kind of like if you were to export the data that you get from like, VR chat, you know, with some other tools. So yeah, those are the options. So, you know, are they right? Yes, they all are in their own ways. But you have to make that decision, which one's right for you.
Makes sense. And inevitably they're all going to change every 10 minutes as well. Cause the pace of innovation is just,
yeah, I'm right now. I was looking at, you know, like, my Xsense suit. I'm like, it is a little bit expensive. You know, and I've always paid for it. They've never given me any free versions. but at the same time, it's been so worth it. And I'm just like, man, how long until somebody takes them over and makes it better? But, you know, in my opinion, for what it is I do specifically, Xsense all the way.
I don't know. Isn't there like a real-time version of Move AI now? A quasi-real-time version?
I don't know. I'd have to, I know Fred Isaacs, he's been doing stuff and I haven't really talked to him about it, but if there was, I don't know how clean it would really be. Cause like with Move AI, you have to like step out, do a calibration thing and then step in. And so how all of those, the latency between each one of the phones and trying to make it all work. I don't know if it's reliable enough yet. So I don't know if I would even suggest it yet. Because I haven't seen it, even if there is.
Yeah, me neither. I heard about it. It's a different, totally different product. I know they're doing some cool stuff with Disguise these days as well. But yeah. I mean, it's going to be a really interesting space to watch. I think there's so much in the machine learning space that's just taking everything by storm. I can't help but think that stuff is really going to be, and maybe help with the issues that some of the inertial suits have too.
And there's also facial animation too. I see, you know, facial animation, like I use my iPhone, majority of the time I use my iPhone, but this is where iClone is really strong. Like I will use iClone a lot for facial animation because I have a little more control without having to deal with blueprints as much. Like imagine Unreal Engine right now does not have the ability to just drop in audio and it automatically does all the lip work for you. Like that doesn't happen. But it does in ReIllusion's iClone 8. What's really great is, and I do this a lot, I will, in my mic over there, I'll just record an entire episode and then I'll take that audio from all my voice acting and I'll throw it right on top of a character and it moves the character's mouth exactly how it needs to go, including the tongue. This doesn't check your tongue other than tongue out, right? But that makes a lot of difference. If you're like, let's say you wanted to go over there, you know, like, so you can see the tongue, although it'd be like, it's a different movement, right? So that's what I like about them is you can really get into that little bit. So.
Any, not about technology at all, but going back to the old school, any like acting performance tips for people who maybe haven't got that experience yet?
So the number one thing that I've seen people have issues with is camera awareness, like understanding exactly where you are. Like it's a little bit harder in the virtual space to act because of the fact that you don't actually see what it is that you're acting to. But what I like to do is I create blockouts. So in order to help your acting in the virtual space specifically, because it's kind of what we're talking about here, what I do is blockouts. And I did this in the, for Eric Baer, when we did the belonging series, I looked at everyone's projects. So they sent in the project. I had a real quick look around their scenes and I'm like, all right, cool. And then they sent me a block out, which is basically, you know, like, okay, here's a bed. And then right over here, there's a chair. And then here's a door they walk through. And I would take all of that stuff. And in real life, I would put like a box. And then I would draw a picture on the wall and be like, here's where you're supposed to look. And then I'd put a chair over there, you know? And so having physical visualization of where you are in 3D space helps you a lot. So that's one big thing a lot of people should do instead of just trying to wing it, unless you're in an open space or if you're in a chair and you can clearly, hey, I know how to talk to a camera. It's right there, you know, like whatever. But yeah, it's getting yourself into character first, thinking about them and living in that world and then letting yourself in there using visual stuff. It's
Do the same thing with a crocodile.
Yeah. Like right now, like if I just wanted to be the silly crocodile right now, I could be, you know, like I can do a live stream if you want. We can keep talking and I'll just run it.
So, and how, Mr. Crocodile, how did you get started being a crocodile?
Oh, well, if I'm going to do a silly crocodile, I really got to put on the voice, but yeah, I can do this right now.
Like, but I think about how would he do it, right? So while we're talking, I'll actually launch Silly Crocodile so you can see what this looks like in real time. Because this is the kids series. And this, by the way, literally just using my phone. I'm not using a motion capture suit for this. And, you know, I'm garnering a lot of views. So it's working. Let's see. Get this going here. Yeah, what else we can see? Do I ever create video games? Yes, I do create video games. Not so much lately. I take that back. Yes, I do it for my kids. I create all sorts of videos for my son who loves Godzilla. And there's no Godzilla games. So I have been creating silly little Godzilla games. I haven't released them to public, but if anybody wants them, I'll gladly send them. You just have to get used to the fact that it's my son making all the silly voices, which I love. And if you have kids and you do all of this stuff, like absolutely get into creating video games while you do this, because it helps you to understand blueprints on a whole new level. You know, I've made VR games. I've made AR games. You can go on itch.io. And look up Daydream Studios, and you'll actually see a catalog of some of the games that I've created, full worlds and all of that. And matter of fact, I made one in 1 week during when the pandemic first hit. I wanted to be the first one to create a pandemic game. And so I created it there. I don't know where I can put that link or whatever, but.
Send it to us. We can throw it out there.
Yeah. Let's see. I'll do that a little bit later on. But yeah, itch.io / Daydream Studios. I think that's literally the link to that if you wanted to check that out.
Done any, and then, any mocap with the kits?
No. Well, I've tried. They don't fit the suit. But I have tried. I tried a couple of the mocap solutions, but none of them really worked with my kids. So the video to mocap isn't quite there enough for me to use more often. Okay, double checking. I'm gonna run this thing here. This is my silly crocodile. I'm just kidding. That's not the thing I wanted. I'm opening up LiveLink Face on my iPhone right now. I've launched Unreal Engine. Pa pa pa. Okay, and then I've got to make sure that my crocodile is set up to my face. So basically, actually, you know what? Why don't I just show this? I'm like talking about this, and I should really be showing this. So here we go. Very quickly, behind the scenes of the silly crocodile. I moved the wrong thing. Hang on. I was trying to grab OBS.
If anyone's listening in their car right now, you should check out the YouTube channel when it's on, when it's up live. It's worth watching.
All right. So here we are. This is a silly crocodile. This is the way the scene looks. So this is just like a basic little scene that I'm throwing together for you guys right now. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to live stream this guy. So first I'm going to grab my character here. I've got several different versions of him, depending on how it is that I need to play him. And I say play because it's literally a video game character. So these are different versions of how this character is made. Hang on, let me make this bigger so you can see it better. That was almost perfect. There, now you can see my whole screen. So like I have different types of characters that I'm going to use for this. So like if I wanted to walk around with him right now, I can hit play and physically click that. Oh, is my controller not connected? Wait, did I not connect that thing right? Ha, that's funny. I was saying I could do that and then there it goes. Didn't work. Whatever. Okay, so, because I have this open, is that why? Nope, it's just being, it's being wonky. Whatever. Okay, so let's go open this up. Ah, I'm doing all the things wrong right now. It's funny, I did this.
Demos.
Well, I did this just literally. I had a talk just before this, and it was perfect. Of course it was. All right, so I'm going to go to my blueprint, open up my blueprint. I'm going to go to my character, and then I'm going to make sure that the animation is being called to the right place. Okay. Get over to the head. Wait, I just closed out the wrong window again. There we go. Head. Head. Make sure that face right there is connected to my phone. And that was it. Compile. Okay, we can see that that's moving. And then. Oh, and then I got to do the main blueprint. Oops, I closed that again. Which is right here. There we go. Oh, because I changed the name on my phone. That's why it happened. Okay.
So now I could be the silly crocodile. Yeah. And be able to talk in real time like this.
Yeah. So heads up, head down. I would look around, but I don't have that connected right now. But yeah.
That's awesome. Maybe I have to have the crocodile on the podcast someday as well.
Yeah.
How do you do the facial expressions?
They're just blend shapes.
Okay.
Yeah. So all the different, like the mouth, this is actually my Face2D Live Unreal Engine Marketplace app that I have. So like you can go on to Unreal Engine Marketplace and just look up Face2D Live. And that's what's included there. I actually have a new version of Face2D Live that includes a lot more as well. So like different face shapes and all of that. But yeah.
That's awesome. Very cool. Well, yeah, again, if anybody's listening just on audio, you should come back and check out the YouTube channel. It's worth seeing. Don't usually show visuals on the podcast, but come back and check it out. Check the video out. Did we get any more questions? Somebody's... yeah, no, I think we did. I think we got through them. Anything that you are excited about in that you see coming up? Maybe it's in new tech or new ideas. What are you excited about at the moment?
The most excited, the one thing I'm the most excited about is literally seeing what other people start to create. There's nothing in this world that is more exciting to me than seeing what other people are going to create. Because like, I know that what I'm doing is just scratching the surface. But I know that what people are going to make with this stuff is going to be mind-blowing and just freaking amazing. And so that's you can make cool tech all day long, because we're in this world where like it's just common knowledge that cool things are constantly coming. So it's not surprising. The only thing that is surprising is people. People surprise me. People impress me. Not tech.
They do tech random just stuff.
Yeah, like especially do kids. Cool stuff. Yeah, no, for kids, it doesn't matter, like whether it's for kids or for what, like, I want to see more stuff. Like the only people right now that I'm seeing that are really, really active are the teachers who are teaching this stuff and a handful of the creators who are actually doing something with it, you know? So like big shout out again to like Solomon Jagway and Jonathan Winbush, big respect for those guys. You know, I miss Corey Strasburger. I can't wait till he comes back and starts getting in the field again. A big shout out to Teflon Sega for all the really cool innovations that he's doing and his outside of the box thinking that I love about that guy. And for everyone else out there that's been really putting in the time to try new things, which I very much respect. And regardless of what level you are as far as being a creative or how big your audience is, so long as you're doing this stuff and you're progressing forward and not comparing yourself to others, but rather who you were yesterday, get it. Like keep creating, don't give up. Because man, if you stay on this stuff right now, you are ahead of the game by years. And like imagine if you started today and you're just learning under Unreal Engine today, in about 3 years, you're going to be a badass. Like I didn't know this stuff 3 years ago. Like I knew Unity, so there's a little bit of that, right? But I did not know Unreal Engine 3 years ago. And now I'm doing this stuff and I'm feeling like I belong here. So,
that's awesome.
And it's 3 years is nothing, man. 3 years is nothing.
It goes by in a flash. Yep. Especially once you've had kids, it seems to get even quicker.
Yes.
Unfortunately. Yeah. Well, and the consistency is the key, right? It, being consistent, making sure that you keep going, being in a great community for me has been everything since I started working in computer graphics, being around other people who can inspire you, but also pick you up when there have times where you feel like, oh, this is really hard and you want to give up. That's where community really comes in, I think.
Yeah. So like everybody should be getting involved with everything they can when it comes to virtual stuff. You know, if you are interested in those, like get into that, get into like cgsummit.org, get into all of that really can help to fuel you to, you know, ignite you to learn and keep you interested. And you know what, like we really need to start getting more people together as well for like, you know, groups of just chats, masterminds, like you're doing this stuff, which is really, really great, but even bringing in more people, man, get involved with the community. That's really what it is. Get into a community.
Yeah, it's really, really important. Anything that you would like to share with people? Any places where people can follow what you're doing?
Sure. If anybody wants to check out my work, you can go to daydreamstudios.com and you'll see all sorts of different things that I'm doing. And, you know, if you have any questions whatsoever, if you just you're stuck on a problem, I love when people have problems and they can't do something because it gives me the opportunity to learn something. Because if you're having a problem I've never had before, then that's an opportunity for me to learn something as well. So, yeah, please reach out to me if you ever have questions or have problems. I'm an open book.
That's very, very cool of you. And is there anything else that you want to share? Any things you're releasing or any things to watch out for?
You know, I'm just a little bit of everything, man. Just I don't have any one thing. I just kind of have all the things, you know, unless you have kids. Now, if you've got kids, please have them watch Silly Crocodile, you know, because like I love that. but other than that, no, I just want to do good for the community. That's it.
Well, it's a total pleasure having you with us here today. Thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You bet. Yeah. And thanks also to all of our listeners. Thank you guys for being here today and asking great questions. And this is the other part of the community that we have at CG Pro, being able to do these live and have people join and ask questions. So thank you all for being a part of this. You can always follow us at becomecgpro.com or join our Facebook group. But thank you again, Corey. And I hope that you will all join us in another couple of weeks for our next episode. But
yep.
Have a great day, everybody. Hit Corey up on LinkedIn. Wrong direction. Hit Corey up on LinkedIn. And I underscore, just keep learning, keep making, keep growing a little bit every day. Go out there and make some cool stuff and share it with us. All right. See you all soon.
Bye.